Uh-huh. Aurora. Good heavens. All right. On Planet Waves FM, Pacifica Radio Network. This is Chandra Studio. The portion of our program where I discuss sex as an existential matter. I will repeat, probably a good way to open every program, my definition of Tantra. You'll see all kinds of definition of Tantra, which are really Neo-Tantra, mingled up with Neo-Kama Sutra and stuff like that. Tantra is not most of those things. Tantra is a study in existence that uses sex for its metaphor. It's not merely intellectual, but the orientation is that sex is a metaphor for existence, and then this, let's say, transforms the roles of men and women and the connections that we share and reshapes all of our thinking about relationships, a relationship to ourself, and our most important relationship, which is to existence. And so this is not so much a discussion of sexual technique, though there are techniques involved that are not, well, anyway, this is not about, you know, how to not ejaculate or something like that, but rather what is this thing that we experience called sexuality, and what is it about how nothing exists? No, certainly no human experience exists without sex. Everybody's fucked into existence. I mean, I'm sure there's a few turkey-baster babies out there, but that's still sexual reproduction, even if there was no penetration. The other forms of sexual, there is penetration, maybe by a turkey-baster or some other medical equipment, but it's still sexual reproduction. And besides which, like 99.99999% of us were fucked into existence. How about that? How about that? You, me, Einstein, Aurora, you know, Mark Knopfler, Jerry Garcia, Bjork, Florence, the machine, everybody fucked into existence. How can that be controversial if existence is not controversial? Oh, and it is. All right. So there's my TMI definition of Tantra. Last week, I had a bit of the interview with Barry Weiss, the New York Times dissident writer, who conducted one of the best sex interviews I have ever heard in my life, and I am a connoisseur, and I can almost look at my watch and say, okay, this has been going on for 1 minute and 30 seconds, and in approximately 15 seconds, they're going to screw the whole thing up. Well, that never happened with Barry Weiss and her kind of research partner, Ayella, who blew the whistle on the contemporary in silico sex work industry, the cam industry, porno, quote-unquote porno. She's got a thing on Pornhub. And hey, you know, just look her up, Aella. You can watch all kinds of, you can watch her do all kinds of fun stuff and send some money her way if you want to get on her OnlyFans. I haven't done that yet. I'm going to reach out to her because she's so articulate and so intricate. And that left me with a lot to think about. And it opened up a chapter in my in silico sex discussion, which has been a kind of a thing I've been stumbling over in Tantra Studio for a long time, because so much sex, so many billions and billions of hours of sexual experience are conducted through the computer, as are so many meeting services of various kinds and all of this. Like, well, I know the effect of all this electrical and digital technology on people, and it's not incarnate. It's not. Your saving grace in it is to be creative. Be creative with it. Now, the many of the women, particularly, who are doing the cam model things are being very creative. I like to scroll through the channels on Chatterbait and find the ones who have like some sense of the theater that they're in. They're creating sexual theater. Some of them are incredibly creative, beautifully well done, absolutely incredible theater, right? That's creative. They're benefiting because it's creative. A lot of the guys basically just masturbate and or masturbate and throw money, not so creative. And herein lies one of the issues. Anyway, I invited feedback to last week's program and got some. I will link to the two written pieces. They were for men. My friend and, let's say, teacher, Erica Willinger, who I believe is in Germany these days, responded with an audio response. That's one of the ways she likes to respond. She sends me audio, and she's got a super creamy voice, which you're going to get to hear in a second. And she shared her response to this conversation, of which there was only, I only played about 9 minutes. You can hear the whole thing, and there's lots more in there. And it was really lovely to hear Erica give another angle, because I asked for women to come forward and talk about the female side of this equation, which, just like the women, are all fed lines about the guys, like all they want to do is jizz on your face. They don't really care about you. The men are fed lies about the women, and then a lot of women are organized around kind of the rules. There's a book called The Rules, which maybe lots haven't read, but the be difficult, don't be vulnerable, sex is your only power meme spreads. And it's not fun. A lot of fun could be had. Sad the waste of sweet time, stretching before and after, said T.S. Eliot. Let's listen to what Erica has to say, and then I'm going to jump back in when she's done. Here you go.
Hi, Eric. How's it going? Eric, I just wanted to send you a little feedback on the last Planet Waves FM program. It was excellent. I listened to the entire 4 hours straight through and wanted to just make some additional comments regarding the Tantra Studio part. But first of all, I just wanted to say I really enjoyed the interview with Mark Crispin Miller. That was great. And he came up with quite a few terms that I felt were really succinct, really described the situation so well, like bio-fascism and what was that word to do with identity? How people are using this sense of identity based on their feelings and this sense of tribalism to justify having any opinion that they want, even when it makes zero sense whatsoever. Just this morning, I listened to, or was it yesterday? I listened to an interview with Aldous Huxley from 1953. Not long, 12 minutes long, just found it on YouTube. And he was describing exactly the situation that we are now in. At the time of the interview, he was describing it as a potential risk for the future, at least in terms of how he saw things potentially developing, based on the forces of things like overpopulation and technology. It was really interesting. And we're there, Mr. Huxley, we are there. It's totally wild. He spoke a lot about persuasion at the level of this subconscious primal level. So, fear, basically. And we're there, we're just so there. So this all came together so succinctly, so poignantly for me today. And so the Tantra Studio. was so interesting to hear Ayala talking about her compassion, that she loved her clients. And not in the sense of like romantic or stomach, butterflies in the stomach type thing, but love in the sense of deep compassion. And that really struck a chord in me. I feel like I came out of the moralistic paradigm of sexuality, having grown up in a very fundamentalist Christian community. There was a lot of sexual taboo, and there was a lot of guilt and shame that came out of sex, things that were happening behind closed doors, so to speak. My mother was a very sexual woman and didn't want to stay within the confines of a traditional monogamous Christian marriage, and had an affair with the next door neighbor, which resulted in my parents getting divorced and all this kind of like massive wave of instability and trauma actually that happened to us. And it was all sort of blamed on her, in the sense of it being like, well, you know, the wanton woman, the slut, it's all her fault because she wanted to have sex with other men. It's just a narrative, right? It's that narrative. And so my own personal journey changed a lot after I had a child. Prior to having a child, I had a different relationship to sex and men. It was way more territorial. It was way more like, I don't know how to explain it, except that there was like some kind of biological mandate that I had to meet. And in order to like find the mate and get pregnant and have a nest to bring that offspring into, created this sense of urgency and territorialness and jealousy. I don't know. It was, I feel so much of it was based in that biological circumstances around reproduction. After I had my child, 2 years later, I divorced his father. And that's when things really took off for me in terms of feeling like I was coming back to who I really was sexually. In the beginning, as a child, I was an extremely sexual child. I masturbated a lot. I experimented with other children. I experimented with a lot of things. And for me, the harm from those situations was not the sex itself. It was the set and setting. It was the cultural circumstances surrounding that event that was the harmful part. The shame, the guilt, the taboo, the repression, all this stuff, right? That was far, far, far more harmful than the act or the acts themselves. And in fact, to this day, like so much of my erotic inspiration, or where I go to really, like when I'm masturbating and I am reaching for orgasm and I'm going in that direction, the places that my mind goes to in order to reach orgasm is very, very often to those early sexual acts. And I don't find it in any way for me to be some kind of like neurotic, unhealed, trauma-based response. It feels now, since I've worked through and purged myself of a lot of the religious cultural conditioning around that, that's all gone. And so now it's just that base erotic energy, and it's great. So I have a really different relationship to all of that. And it really came from separating sex from culture, sex from religion, sex from the family, the tyranny of the family, so to speak. Right. I appreciated your point a lot about being very, very skeptical of any type of narrative that essentially defines men and women as fundamentally different sexually. I tend to disagree with the statement that men are more sexually driven than women. It's too binary. And also similarly that, you know, women are not as sexually driven as men is the same thing, right? I don't agree with that. I think there's different forms, and like Alea said in the interview, men and women have different methods or forms of finding or expressing intimacy. That really rang a bell for me, and her discussion about compassion and almost being like a therapist in a sense for men, this also struck a bell for me. I don't know if I would define myself as a thresholder like you've described it. I don't know. I haven't really explored that, but I am now in a place in my life where sex just seems so, it just seems so natural that if the chemistry is there, if the impetus is there, I would have no fundamental problem with having sex with everybody, basically. And in terms of it being sort of a therapy, like I've gone there with a number of people, including my ex-husband. We're great friends. And there's like such a profound insecurity in so many people. And because I've had more sex with men than women, I'm speaking more from that I find so many men are profoundly insecure about sex. And actually, that is the reason why, one of the reasons why I faked orgasms for so long with so many partners. Because it was almost like I had to fake it so to appease their sense of, that need to feel like validated as a lover, like, oh yeah, I made her come, you know? So one of the things I've stopped doing is faking orgasms. And it's been interesting because I can enjoy sex so much, and calling out, like you described in the Tantra studio, the vocalization, the moaning, and all this calling out that the women do. This is so bang on, Eric. I just was so happy to hear you describe that. And when I enjoy sex so much that I'm calling out, most of my lovers think that I'm having an orgasm. But I'm not really, you know? And actually, it's orgasm itself has less importance for me than everything else. The intimacy, the closeness, the scent, the communication, all of that. Right. So achieving orgasm is it's not what it used to be for me, in the sense of being genuine and being authentic with that and being honest with that requires a lot of openness and trust with another person. And unfortunately, there's not so many men out there who are willing to have an open, honest, candid conversation about all of this. But I'm learning to be more secure all the time in myself, and therefore having the courage to open up those conversations as much as possible, and just to see how far one can go. And occasionally there is somebody who can have these kinds of conversations, and it's always the best sex. So I just wanted to throw my little two cents worth in there. as a reflection on the Tantra Studio, it was very interesting, very stimulating. It gave me lots of reflections, and I just wanted to share that with you. So that's it for now. I'm actually looking right now online for Judas and the Black Messiah, the film on Fred Hampton that Mark mentioned, and I'm having a hard time. You can't find it really for streaming. I think you have to buy it. But yeah, anything with Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party, it's totally, totally fascinating and relevant. Okay, my friend, thank you so much and hope you're doing well. Thank you for your time. Ciao.
Erica Willinger, thank you very much. So many points here that are worthy of contemplation and sharing. Openness and trust. How about that? So this is the thing. And it is the thing that makes sex more beautiful and interesting. I can't imagine having sex with someone where there's not openness and trust. That's the ground for me. That's the environment that I can be myself in. And most people can confuse this with being in a permanent relationship, as if there can be no openness and trust without being in a permanent, so-called permanent, married, boyfriend, girlfriend, officiated, certified by the community, and, you know, checked box on Facebook and all that stuff. And this, of course, is a cover-up for all the curiosities that people have and the many things that they want to know, and that curiosity is one of the most powerful and helpful human growth emotions, and sexual curiosity is the most powerful form of curiosity. And I would propose that if you put any two people together long enough, eventually they will become sexually curious about one another, regardless of what the relationship status or the attractiveness, the attraction status is. They will still become sexually curious just because that's what humans are about one another. And there's a lot of dancing around this curiosity that goes on. And we are at a point now where even attraction has been criminalized. You know, attraction is spoken of as if it's some disgusting thing, that any man who's into women is a pervert. Like, we have heard this. I've heard this. I've been accused of this. I've seen other men accused of this. I've talked to lots of men about their experiences of women and just wanting to have fun and real experiences with women. I've had quite a few guys open up over the years, and we've talked about this, and there is this profound frustration that many men feel about being wrongly cast, completely misperceived and misunderstood. And many moms came forward to me during the, since I know so many of them and so many are my readers and listeners, who tend to be middle-aged women, meaning women who are of childbearing age or who are raising children. So many of my readers over the years and my clients, and said, you know, I have a son and he does not know what to do. One mom wrote to me and said he wants to ask a girl out to the prom, but he's afraid he's going to be accused of being a sexual predator. Someone succeeded. You might think, how fucked up is that? He just wants to ask a girl to the prom and he's worried about being accused of being a sexual predator for a social rite of passage, or let's take a walk on the beach or whatever. Let's go out for ice cream sodas. But no, the prom, all the same thing, really. That is a psyop. Someone did that to us to make boys that anxious, and many of them are. Many of them are so intimidated by girls and by young women. There's a taco stand I like to hang out in. My kid brother, Kyle Benjamin, is the proprietor of the Burrito, where you can find me some evenings hanging out, sitting outside, playing my guitar. And I was talking to a young guy there, one of the guys who worked in the taco shop. And I just started asking him about women and his experiences in relationships with women. And he said that he wasn't, guy's like 24, tainted. He hadn't been tainted. Like, what's tainted? Never touched a pussy. Had not been tainted by the vagina. Not gay. As far as I could tell, heterosexual. Didn't seem even meekly bisexual to me. Tainted. That's how he described having any contact with the female genitals. Tainted. holy water. All right, so what you heard in Erica was a real presentation about her journey and her inner being. I would encourage more of this, please. Send me your recordings. Call me up if you want to be in a conversation on the program. Somewhere we have a thing called the Blue Studio Sessions. I don't know if those audio files have survived the many reorganizations of the Planet Waves FM audio database, but I think there is much in the way of conversation to be had. I want to just close by mentioning who Erica is in my life among the roles she's played. We've never met in person, but we certainly have a bond and trust and lots about each other. And from late 2016 to early 2018, I did a celibacy experiment, a conscious celibacy experiment. Supposed to last 1 year. It ended up going like a little more than 5 seasons. And toward the end of this, as I've documented this whole thing, I've written much about it in many photographs, which comprise Book of Blue from those years, and in some ways the theme is always present, the sex, no sex kind of binary, right? That the tension there. He's got a lot of that in society with your people who refuse to have sex and then the involuntarily celibate men who are reviled in many ways by I've heard so many nasty things said about guys who consider themselves involuntarily celibate. And so forth. So anyway, I commenced this process with a ritual at the sex club I was hanging out with at the time, a place called Decadence in New York in Chelsea. A great place led by Kat Orme and her then husband, who very suddenly died of liver cancer. And I would spend half the party sitting in Saul's office, right? Could you imagine? I loved this guy so much. And we would talk about anything. And he was just a kind of a grisly old Jewish guy who was a member of the lifestyle, was a swinger. And he had this club, and he'd sit in his office during the parties. And I would always visit and hang out with him for at least an hour. And just absolutely loved these people. So anyway, my one-year celibacy experiment begins at Decadence on the winter solstice of 2016, I think. And so I'm getting all these instructions, right? All of these like kind of like Pleiadian, basically tantric instructions, like not orders, but like, okay, here's something to do. Here's the way to think of this. Here's this experiment. Here's that experiment. So the whole thing is kind of guided intuitively. And toward the end of the year, I got an instruction set that said, okay, now find 2 women in your life and give to them the choice of whether you'll ever have sex again or not. okay. What's this about? I didn't really get it till we were finished. And so Erica was one of them. And a friend of mine here in Kingston was another one. Somebody who was my girlfriend in like 1992. And then we've just stayed friends ever since then. Christine here. I know many Christines. And so I contacted them and essentially set up what the Quakers would call a clearness committee, where they understood the journey I'd been going through and the depth of my process. Because when you consciously subtract sex with others, there's a deep thing that happens. And I knew this was not, you know, supposed to be just like giving up sex forever, but I had to embrace that possibility along the way. And the way that I embraced the possibility was through my connection with Erica and Christine, was to say, okay, so the guidance I've gotten from the goddess is that I'm supposed to surrender this and give it to you to decide. And like the options were, you must continue for another 90 days or another year or whatever, or that's it, no more sex for whatever reasons, or whatever conditions are unconditioned. So the whole, I turned over all the options and the power of decision to them and said, okay, and you know, my part in this is to be the kind of homeopathic patient in the clearness committee to answer any questions about my experiences and anything that you know that you want to know. So part of this was total transparency, and that's one of the things that makes someone your tantric teacher. It's one of the things that makes someone a thresholder, is that there's total transparency about all facets of sexuality, your sexuality, when you do this. And it's hard to do this when there's an emotional investment, i.e. they're your boyfriend or your girlfriend, because there's always going to be a competitive factor or a jealousy factor or a bias factor. It can happen. It can happen. But most people are too attached. And some people end up, Vestal types get in these situations a lot where they are holding space for people. And so what Erica was involved with was holding space for me and whatever process I was going through. And when I had completed the part of the exchange where I said, okay, we all are going to agree, which they did. See, they had to agree that they were going to take this power, that I was going to give them this power, and they had to consciously agree to take it, or it was not a valid process. And they both were wholly willing to do this. What occurred to me was the trust involved. Because one of the things that people's relationship lives and their sex lives and their abuse backgrounds contribute to over and over again is what would seem for many to be a near total inability to trust anyone of the opposite sex. And the expectation of getting messed with and cheated on and lied to and screwed over and whatever the abuse in some way, the dramas are manifold. And so what this became for me was an exercise in standing in the trust that I had offered to them and that they had accepted, and surrendering to their power entirely, which meant to trusting them and to trusting myself and to trusting the whole process. And this was a profound stage of my sexual healing, because anywhere along the sexual healing process comes the part about the opposite sex in total, who and what are these beings? Do they have my best interest in mind? What are they going to do? Are they trustworthy? What is this all about? And so you don't know till you go, right? It's one thing to talk about seeing the Sierra Nevadas. It's another thing to get in your car and go there and get out and walk around and climb up them. And that's what this was. It was a full-on tantric journey. And the thing is that for men, the single most important part of the tantric experience is the submission to the trust and power and supremacy of women. And as Joe said, one of my teachers, he said, yeah, in a world where the women are, for the most part, really pretty messed up, when it comes to sex and trust and power and relationships and this territoriality and their ovaries running their lives and they don't admit it and blaming men for everything and all and all the complete horseshit that feminism has dumped on women who have no concept there's other models of equality. Feminism is not McDonald's. This is, you know, it's made out to be the only spokesperson, there's billions of them, but for equality. And there's other models of equality other than feminism. So anyway, in a world where there has been so much damage done to women, yet for a man in tantric training, connecting to women as the teacher has an added level of challenge. Because any man who does that must themselves become a teacher of trust to get the experience somewhere where it's relevant and meaningful. So, to me, doing this felt like the ground just completely shifting and like settling into place beneath me. And I had a missing experience. And in the act of trusting, I realized the struggle I had to trust for so long. And then there I was doing it, having essentially handed my sexuality over to others. And everybody understands how important my sexuality is and what a privilege of incarnation I think it is to share and explore sexuality with people. So this review process went on into the spring of 2018, if I've got my dates right. I'm pretty sure that I do. And the outcome was basically you are clear to do what you want. You've been through this. You have shown your willingness to surrender to your truth and the truth, and you are now free. That's where we left it. Interestingly, after this whole experience, the next thing that happened was this phony version of the Me Too movement came after me for an article that I wrote talking about how men and women survivors needed to be treated equally and how we could not have a world where all someone had to do was point the finger and accuse and someone would be destroyed. And when that was done to me, I had the strength and the trust in the community to completely withstand it. Through that whole thing, I never stopped being a teacher of sexuality. I did my show every week and carried on. And I'm wondering now, sitting here, what that would have been like had I not gone through this extended process of learning and directly experiencing trust and demonstrating my trust to two women conscious of each other. They're both, you know, both willingly participants in this, having not only said, okay, I trust, that's nice, but saying, I trust, and here you go. I surrender. I think it's possible, given the betrayal of the people involved, that I might have sustained some devastating permanent injury in my ability to trust women had I not gotten on to that solid ground. Right, you know, ending that whole process right before that charade happened. And the thing is, many of the men who were put through this, it was completely unjustified. And even in the cases where it was justified, equality as a principle of feminism, right? That's the theory, right? Equality. Equality would say, we believe you've conducted yourself in this way. Let's talk about it. Right? What else is equality? Equality must contain some respect for the other, some concept. Well, maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's something in between. Maybe there's a misunderstanding here. No. What this counterfeit of feminism became was no communication, no trust. Accusation equals guilt. And for many reasons, it is clear that nothing of the kind is what feminism aspires to be. And we need something better than feminism. And with power come responsibilities. They have to. Unless you think that everybody should be running around with a Glock 19 and an AK-47 with no training and licensure and whatever else you might think that a gun owner should have. I would say that the Second Amendment is a right. Okay, and if it is a right, then the right comes with responsibilities. And the responsibility of equality comes with the right of equality comes with certain responsibilities for the use of that power. Read the comment by Larry, which I have linked to the standalone version of last week's Tantra Studio. There's two written responses by men, one gay, one straight, one a married guy, an older married guy, one a gay male dominant, whose tantric practice, this is Larry, who's one of the, let's say, spiritual underpinnings of Tantra Studio. Larry, I love you. And a bold supporter of Planet Waves. And yeah, if there's going to be trust, everybody has to conduct themselves responsibly. And ladies listening, Annika and others, there are many men who have the utmost respect for women, who hold women in reverence, who want nothing more than to share what they have, to offer themselves spiritually and financially and sexually. Many, many men want to do this. And most of them are terrified or hapless or some combination of this, let's say, unrighteous shadow Kali energy that can be invoked at any time. Going to the rifle range is not a mass shooting. Now, sorry to bring a gun metaphor in here, but we know one of the things that men are accused of is their penis being a weapon. This all needs to stop. And there's only one way it's going to stop. And that is if we find a way to have a conversation, ongoing, daily, and where that conversation in itself is not construed as automatically being abusive. There's a whole branch of this political game where even the mere discussion of sex, the raising of the topic, the inquiry, is considered a form of rape. What planet is this? What? Erica began her presentation mostly there, once she got through talking about Mark Miller, with a discussion of moralism. The philosophical thing that needs to happen more than anything is that sex needs to be construed as something other than a moral issue, a moral failing. This is largely the work of the Catholics. If you want to read how this happened, there's a book called Eros Denied by Wayland Young. It's easy to find copies for $1. A lot were printed. It came out the year that I was born, in 1964. It is a first-order tantric text for our era. Eros Denied by Waylon Young. It was very famous in its time. A very good historical document. Took him 5 years to research and write it, probably much longer, but 5 years of active research and writing. It's only 300 pages. It's quite short, and he writes with this British wit. But what he does is he explains to you how sex became a moral issue and what damage that did. We need to suspend the moral judgment of desire and of sex and of men and of women and of gay people and of libertines and of this offender and that offender and that other offender that are getting run up the flagpole every couple of years. The phantom bugaboo changes, and put all that down, and show up for a conversation where we agree to be honest. We will need some facilitators who have themselves gone through a clearness process. I'm happy to engage the training of facilitators. I'm a well-trained facilitator. I've gone through much clearness process and facilitation training and have done it a lot. I'd be happy to train people who want to be facilitators. There are occupational hazards to this that must be acknowledged. All of that having been said, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We will go out with a couple of back-to-back Aurora, can't read my handwriting. Let me open up the folder. The Aurora folder. Let's see. So first piece on the way out is going to be Wisdom Cries Into. Come on. I've got this somewhere. Maybe it's on my desktop. Oh, I hate when this happens. It's written. I just can't read my handwriting. Who cares? Who cares what it's called? This is music. This is Aurora, and you've been listening to Tantra Studio on Planet Waves FM. To repeat my email address, efc@chironreturn.org. All right. With love. Bye for now. Diamond eyes.
to the star, back to we are back home. We gotta go back to the star, back to we are back home. Tick tock, tick tock. Great. you ever learn is to love.